Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Being a first-time parent is hard enough, but couple that with economic, social, emotional, or other factors, and you might be a family at risk. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about families who are at risk? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with families who need extra support and resources through an organization in Maryland. Luz Escobar has been with the Healthy Families Montgomery program for 11 years, holding a variety of positions. She has worked directly with families as a family support worker and a family resource specialist. Currently, she supervises home visitors. Healthy Families Montgomery is a home visiting program serving first-time parents. It has served over 700 families since it began in 1996, families who have been identified as needing extra support as they begin their families. Luz has a degree in social work and is also certified as an international breastfeeding lactation consultant. She's the proud mother of three children, the oldest a recent college graduate, the second currently in college, and the third beginning fifth grade. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Luz.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Would you describe to us what you consider to be an at-risk family?
Well, we consider an at-risk family those families who are at risk of poor parenting outcomes, those families who have low education, are underemployed or not employed, or those families who have inadequate housing. We also consider an at-risk family those families who have unrealistic expectations for child development and discipline, or those families who have mental health issues or suffer from an addiction such as alcohol and drugs. We also consider families at risk to those families who never have had a good role model to follow and might have a record with the law, or they might have been in jail.
You said they're at risk for a poor parenting outcome?
Yes.
What exactly do you mean there?
Well, poor parenting outcomes means that they have a child, they might not know what to do with that child. I mean, they haven't been able to cope well because they don't know anything about child development, or they don't have a good role model, a family member who has been with them, teaching them how to raise a child. I mean, probably they have been harshly disciplined, so they have unrealistic expectations on how to educate a child. For example, we can have a mother who thinks that toilet train a baby at 12 months of age is a good age to toilet train the baby. So they don't know anything about, you know, what can happen to a child when he is toilet trained early in life, when he's not ready.
So they really need support and guidance and somebody as a role model and somebody to sort of help them along the way?
Exactly. I think that they need education. Some of them need education. Some of them just don't know because they haven't had that in their lives. So they just need that extra support.
And what does Healthy Families Montgomery do for support?
This is a home visiting program. We visit the families, the mothers, since they are pregnant until the child is up to 5 years of age. During the visits, we provide information and education on infant care, where we emphasize breastfeeding. Then we provide information on child development, and we also encourage mothers to play with those babies. To play with the babies early in the beginning. Some families can say, you know, how can I play with my baby if my baby is so little? He doesn't understand. I had several times when I was visiting new mothers, they said, you know, you are telling me that I should talk to my baby? And I said, yes, you can talk to your baby since he is a newborn baby. So they seem kind of, this can't be happening, you know, how can I talk to this baby and he can't respond to me? And when we teach these mothers, we see that mothers understand that, of course, that babies can have that connection when we communicate with them. So that's one of the first things that we do. We provide education and activities and how the baby develops. And we also try to administer evaluations on how the babies are developing. This is called the Ages and Stages Questionnaire. We administer these evaluations every 4, 6, 8 months and consecutive every 6 to 8 months. So we see how the babies are developing in their intellectual, social, emotional, gross motor, fine motor, areas. And if we notice that the child is low in any area of development, we refer the child to a program in the county that is called Montgomery County Infants and Toddlers. Then a therapist comes, she visits the family, and she assesses the baby. And if she sees that the baby really is low, then we begin to work together. And the family support worker supports the family by doing the same activities that the therapist is teaching to the mom. So once the baby is on target again, then they go and we continue with the family.
If there's something that's more serious, what happens? In other words, if it's not something that can be just fixed by having the mother play with the child more or do activities with the child more, what happens?
We always refer. If it's in regard to mental health, you know, any child who has any behavioral problems or anything in regards to his or her development, we always refer to the specialist. And we teach mothers how to be involved, on how to follow the directions from the doctors. Another thing that we do is that we teach mothers about the importance of immunizations. Some of them don't know that they have to be immunized so often in the first 2 years. So first of all, we enroll them with the pediatrician, and once they are enrolled, the child is enrolled, then we teach mom how she has to follow the immunizations. So this is another important part of our program.
Who funds all this?
Well, we receive funds and financial support from the state of Maryland, Montgomery County, and from other individual donors.
But it's primarily supported by taxpayer money, basically.
Part of that. We have Freddie Mac also support us in some of this, yes.
Luz, do you know whether there are other comparable programs like Healthy Families Montgomery in different parts of this country?
Yes, I think that Early Head Start is another program that is similar to Healthy Families, but they work with older children. So they don't work only with first-time mothers as we do. They can work with the whole family. I mean, if they have two or three children, they work with these two children. But we only work with first-time mothers. That's the difference. But it's the same role. I mean, they have a family support worker who visits the family, and it's almost the same thing. They educate in the same areas that we do.
So other states really could tailor programs to their population depending on what the needs are?
I think so. We have healthy families in several states of the United States. So if someone is interested, they can go to healthyfamiliesamerica.org. So they can obtain more information and they can see if there's have healthy families in their area.
Is there an anecdote that you'd like to tell from all your years of visiting families?
One of the family support workers was assigned a case where the child was a month old. And when the family support worker went to visit the family, the mother doesn't know any English. The mother is living by herself. The father of the baby left her soon after he learned that she was pregnant. She doesn't have anyone in this country. She doesn't have money. She doesn't have a job. The place where she lives, you know, she pays $250 for a room that she shares with someone else. And when the family support worker arrived, she said that the baby was sleeping all the time, very lethargic, no movement. In one visit, two visits, three visits, and the baby was always sleeping. The mother said to her, you know, my child is vomiting a lot. So she said, well, you're going to have to follow that with the doctor because he might be sick. She said, you know, my baby is a very good baby because he's always sleeping. And then the family support worker said, you know what? This is a sign of dehydration. She explained to the mother that she had to play with the baby. And she said, you know, he's always sleeping. So at the end of one of her visits, the mother said, you know, I received this letter and I don't know what it says. She read and it says, you know, you have an appointment at the specialist tomorrow at Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. So the family support worker went with her because she didn't understand English. She didn't know where it was. She didn't know what transportation to take. So the family support worker rode a bus with her. They went to Children's Hospital and the child began treatment. Now the baby is gaining weight and the baby's awake, you know, more frequently, and the mother is learning that the baby doesn't have to be sleeping all the time. She's learning that the child has to eat every 3 hours, And the most important thing is that, as the family support worker says, probably I saved the life of this child, mm-hmm. because this child would have been sleeping and the mother didn't know. She just didn't know that babies don't sleep.
What's wrong with the baby?
The baby had a pyloric problem. He was throwing up.
Pyloric valve, pyloric, is that what it's called?
The pyloric valve was not closed.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about at-risk families.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Luz Escobar about families at risk.
Exactly how do the screening and assessment processes work?
Okay, the screening happens at the health department. All moms who access care at the health department are screened. Then the family resource specialist gets those screens and has an interview through the phone with the mom. She gets the family's address and she sets an appointment with the family. And then she visits the family. We receive approximately 1,000 screens per year.
So do you have a resource person who can
family resource specialist.
And so she can access 1,000
approximately 1,000 screens per year.
Oh, my goodness.
But we only can serve 165. She can visit approximately 165.
So how do you choose which ones you're going to do?
Well, the family resource specialist makes phone calls, and sometimes it is very difficult to get some of these moms. So, you know, it's that first come, first serve. I mean, we call once the family resource specialist gets this appointment. She visits the family. And the families who are screened and are not able to be served because we don't have staff, receive resources. So if the family has any need, this family knows where to go. So they are served at that point.
Is there follow-up to see whether the families actually take advantage of these resources?
No, we don't have any follow-up, but they can call. Again, if they have any questions, they can call.
It sounds like just because of the sheer numbers, people can fall through the cracks just because you can't deal with 1,000 families.
Well, we used to have 2 family resource specialists in the past, but unfortunately, due to budgetary constraints, we are not able to have 2 anymore. So we only have 1. But the ones that are served, the ones that receive the visit from the family resource specialist, can obtain those resources. And once the family resource specialist gets to the family's home, the assessment process begins. At the assessment, the family resource specialist asks for a consent to the mother to be interviewed. And then she asks questions in regards to parenting, in regards to mental health, on housing, employment, education, anger management, expectations of infant development. And once this information is obtained, the family resource specialist goes to the office, discuss this with the supervisor, and the case is assigned if we have an opening.
How does your agency select families to screen in the first place?
98% of the screens come from the health department, but we also have self-referrals. We have had families who call our program and say, you know, I want to be part of your program. I have heard that this is a home visiting program and I want to be part of it. So we go and we assess the family. And if we have an opening, that family receives services.
If there's no opening for lots of these families, obviously most of them, can they reapply the following year or does somebody revisit them the following year, or they're out of that pool and there's a new pool for the next year?
Yes, because, you know, these are for first-time mothers. This is only for first-time mothers. And once the baby gets older, it's not too much that we can do. I mean, if the child is a year old, we could refer that family to other programs. That's what we do. When we have families who call and say, you know, I have a child who's older, where can I go? We refer those families to other programs, like Early Head Start. For example, if we have a family who is in need of a home visitor, we assess the family and we can refer that family to another program like Early Head Start.
How can family members help struggling first-time parents?
I think that one of the most important things to do here would be to have a nurturing environment for the family. I think that all first-time mothers need that guidance, but a guidance without criticism, guidance with love and understanding and open communication. I had several mothers who told me several times, you know, I like when you come because you don't criticize me, you don't judge me. When I ask you things, you tell me things without telling me why should I, what I did this. Or so I think that one of the most important things is to listen to the mom and to be open to answer any questions that she has. And if she has any mistake, or, you know, just to understand that she's learning.
It's funny, we have a cartoon that's up on our bulletin board at the office, and it's so great. It's a three or four little girls standing around, and one of them says, "This time you be the mom, and the rest of us will stand around and judge you."
That's a nice,
cute cartoon.
I have a question for you about socialization for these moms. I remember when I first started out as a mom 37 years ago, it was very important to me to get together with other moms with little babies. Is there any effort to get mothers together or to help them find ways to socialize with other people in similar circumstances?
Yes, we have monthly groups. And precisely one of the important parts of our groups is to have that part, the socialization part. And these moms are able to meet other families who have the same concerns, who are the same age. Some of them can be the same age. So it is nice to see how they become friends and they support one another. And we have seen cases in which they become friends and one goes to work and the other one takes care of the child while the other one goes to work, and vice versa. So it is great to see how they can connect to each other. We also refer these families to a program that is called Parents Resource Center. The children go and have fun. They have different activities to do, and mothers can socialize with other mothers. So this is a very nice resource that we have in Montgomery County.
Are there any preventive measures that family members in the way of support can provide that will maybe head off trouble?
My opinion would be the support. We have very young mothers and open communication with these young mothers. I think that that's crucial.
My mother used to use the term bloody tongue disease for older members of the family. To avoid being judgmental, you keep your mouth shut. You say what's helpful. And you answer when asked.
It's funny, though. You really don't realize how lonely it is being a first-time mother until you are one, or a first-time father, for that matter. And the story in my family, which is quite embarrassing, actually, is when my first child was just an infant, and I talked to him, and he didn't respond, of course, at that point. He was a newborn, and he wiggled around, but there wasn't any conversation that was going on at that point. And I would talk to him. And so I was used to just talking to almost an inanimate object, this little baby. And so at one point, I caught myself putting a roast into the oven saying, "I'm going to put you in the oven now, and I'll be right back in a little while."
And that's why we're concerned to make sure that the mothers have some socialization opportunities.
Yes, it's important.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about at-risk families.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Luz Escobar about at-risk families.
Is there extended follow-up with these families that you're providing resources for and you're saying, here are these resources, have a nice time? Does anybody follow up to see what happens a year down the road, 2 years down the road, and so on?
You know, with the families that we serve, we serve the families up to 5 years. Once they graduate from the program, we don't have any follow-up. But some of them call. Mm-hmm. I still receive phone calls from mothers who graduated some years ago, and they talked to me about their accomplishments. For instance, last week I received a phone call from a mother who told me that she was able to get her driver's license, that she bought her car, that her child is doing well at school. And one of the things that, you know, made me feel very happy was that she said, "I never gonna forget that you told me the importance of setting goals in my life. And since you left, Luz, I had never stopped setting goals in my life." So she's getting ready to buy a house. She's saving money. So there are several things that she has been doing since she finished the program.
So you're giving parents a sense of self-worth in addition to parenting skills.
Exactly, exactly. I think that part of our program is, you know, to have those families feel that they have a strong self-esteem, they feel self-sufficient. And one of the most important things in our program is that we emphasize to set goals in life. In order to go somewhere in life, they have to set goals. So this is a very important part of our program.
Have you noticed sort of cross-pollination if you work with one family and there's a sister who's coming along with a baby and so forth, whether that then rubs off whatever it is that you've taught that parent rubs off on the next group?
Yes, we have seen it. I had a family who had a sister, a very young sister, at the point when I was serving this family. Now I learned that the sister got pregnant. Now, the mother who was part of our program is teaching this mother what I taught her. So she still has copies of the information that I gave her. So it's nice to see that these families don't get that information only for them, but they pass the information to anybody, that someone that is in need. So it's really nice to see that.
It would be interesting to know what happens to these children, the product of all this, when they get to school, where they are in the school system in terms of their skills or their socialization or whatever.
Well, I have talked to mothers who graduated in the year 2002, and some of these children are already in fourth or fifth grade. And this mother told me that her child was doing very well at school, and that teachers were asking her why this child likes to read so much. Who taught this child that reading was so important? So this mother was talking about healthy families. And the school was very interested about the program because at that point they didn't know who we were. So it is nice to see that we see the results there. Children who are doing very well at school, who like to read, who socialize well with others. So this is very nice.
Is this the kind of program that you think state or county governments could replicate across the country?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think that we want to have a strong generation in the future. It would be great to have more sponsors for this program in the whole country.
We like to give our listeners some resources to continue to further pursue some of the issues we've been discussing. Do you have some suggestions?
Yes, I think that in regards to healthy families, as I said before, they can go to healthyfamiliesamerica.org, or they can go to infomontgomery.org in Montgomery County, Maryland. We also have the telephone number in Montgomery County, Maryland. The telephone number is 240-777-GROW.
And this is Child Link.
This is
Child Link. Maryland.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is information that parents would like to have in regards to childcare centers or activities or anything related to children.
They can call this. A place you could take your child.
Exactly,
to.
For activities, for anything that they want to know about children in the county of Montgomery.
Would you repeat that phone number for us?
The telephone number is 240-777-GROW. And we also have PreventChildAbuseAmerica.org. This is nationwide. They can go to that website and to obtain more information on healthy families.
Is there a place that people who would want to spearhead a healthy families type organization in their own communities who are not in Montgomery County, Maryland, could go to, a good resource place?
I think that one good place to go in the web would be healthyfamiliesamerica.org, so they can find all the information that they need to see if they have a healthy families in the area.
So this is a nationwide organization.
This is a nationwide organization.
Umbrella organization.
In 35 states of the United States, we have healthy families. So if they are interested in a program like this one, they can go on the web and they can find out if they have a healthy families program in their area.
Well, you have certainly given us a lot of resources and a lot of hope for families who are at risk and who are struggling. So, Luz Escobar, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 378 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send checks or money orders to support Parents' Perspective to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. And thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.